Well, good afternoon. I'm pleased to be here to, for my part of the presentation, to really share with you from a state perspective what we have been doing around prevention to really lay the groundwork to where I think being able to take advantage or leverage what's happening at a federal level. And I think it's important, particularly as I think about from a state perspective, that no matter what's happening at the federal level, we need to be thinking about at the local level and the state level, what can we build, how can we create the environment? We talk about systems, policies, and environmental changes. What do you need to be doing at your level there within states and locals such that when something comes along, like the federal health reform, you're ready there to grab onto it? And if it isn't there, how you still keep working on prevention within your own state. You know, we look at the money that's being allocated. We know there have already been runs at it. We're going to work really hard to protect it. I think one of the greatest ways is by being able to tell stories. Tom Frieden at the recent annual state health officials meeting, Tom Frieden said, "I need stories." He said, you know, we know what it means to, you know, create environments that make physical activity more possible, but that doesn't sell to policymakers. He said, "I need a story of how Johnny came with his mom to a playground that they never had before because they now have a safe neighborhood and they now have lighted streets to walk on, and Johnny and his mom now go twice a week to this," you know, so it's a different kind of communication strategy to try to protect prevention. But anyway, I'm going to tell you about some of what we've been doing in Minnesota. You can get the flavor of what we're doing to try to protect prevention at a local and state level, which I think then builds the stories for how to protect it at a national level.
We're born with mice in our hands.
For our health reform legislation, we've created a vision and we've wrapped it around the triple aim. And many of you have heard of the triple aim, and I think that's something that the Secretary of Health and Human Services is exploring to couch all of health reform in. And I think what's really good about it is that it does include population health. Don Berwick wrote a paper about the triple aim a while ago in Health Affairs. And it's improve population health, improve the consumer or patient experience, and he said decrease per capita costs. We've turned it in Minnesota around to improve affordability so that they're all in the positive sense. I think one of the things we have to watch on a national level, I've seen this simplified to better health, better care, lower cost. I'm a little nervous about that because it's in a health care perspective, and when you say better health, people don't think population health. So anyway, just something to be aware of, I think, as we go forward. But in essence, we hope this, our vision, creates a better state of health. The groundwork for health reform, there were many groups working on this separately, but out of it came, both of them said, we need to get upstream, as well as our medical association. I would really urge you to work closely with your medical association, who also said, we need to get upstream. So there were multiple voices saying, get upstream in trying to do this. So it led to our 2008 legislation. It's a comprehensive package about what to do with rising healthcare costs and poor quality and access not being what we wanted in Minnesota. And we yet had, at that time, one of the lowest uninsured rates, if not the lowest uninsured rate in the nation. But our legislation starts with an investment in public health. And it's called the Statewide Health Improvement Program. And it was designed to actually work on the leading preventable causes of illness and death of tobacco and obesity. And one of the things that helped us in that designing of it was actually helping people understand that, yep, we can work all we want to on health care. And I use this little story over and over again. I'd say, so we'll make the care for people with diabetes better. But if obesity rates just keep going up and up and up, all we're going to do is just pour more people into the healthcare system with diabetes, and we won't have solved our problem. And that really seemed to resonate, that people realized we needed to move upstream and that we would have the statewide health improvement program. Now, I would remind you, when we talk about prevention, language matters. This program originally was called the Statewide Health Promotion Program. And to be people, that sounded like trinkets and marketing and keychains. And so we quickly changed it in the middle of legislative session. I mean, we, again, it's the inside baseball. We knew what health promotion program meant. And we were going to work on policies and systems and environmental changes. But to policymakers, it sounded like a trinket program. So we changed it to an improvement program, got a better acronym out of it anyway. The other thing is that we used to say we were going to work on tobacco, physical inactivity, you know, and unhealthy eating, and it just, you could just see policymakers glaze over. And we changed it to tobacco and obesity, because everyone had seen obesity. They got that. And we also talked a lot about children and obesity, and people could get that, and it's, you know, mom and apple pie and children and babies and puppies. And so the other thing that was a lesson learned in this was that to really pay attention to what the stories you can tell. And we would talk about SHIP, and I remember distinctly one of my lead people on this was testifying, and it was based on actually, this obesity trends, so tobacco trends. It was based on what was happening with the program that led up to this, and this was STEPS, and STEPS to a Healthier U.S. was what led up to this program, and she was testifying about that, and we had it in four communities where we'd been working on these policy systems and environmental changes, and talked about a community garden. So it was telling the story about this community garden in Rochester, Minnesota, and how the community was coming to it, and what they were growing in the garden. And a key legislator who was on the committee said, well, when my kids were growing up, we had a family garden, and I believe to this day that's why they eat their fruits and vegetables. And she was the one who got us the $47 million. So it's we've just got to learn to talk a language and connect with people in some different ways that have them see themselves and their families and their friends and their neighbors in prevention versus just always talking the policy pieces. So we were able to get the $47 million over 2 years. We, in lots of discussions with the legislature, of course, we want to give this so it goes out to everyone. And every time, the legislature kept putting in there competitive grants. We kept, you know, public health taking it out and saying, nope, we don't want competitive grants. They kept, you know, so we finally said, okay, we could threaten our $47 million, leave the competition, competitiveness in, but we'll figure out a way to do technical assistance to have as many people who want to succeed, they can succeed. So we left competition in, match. Started out with they wanted a 50% match. And we just knew, boy, that's not going to work. So we kept whittling it down. We took competition in. We kept whittling the match down, and we got it to a 10% match. So that's how it ended up. In Minnesota, we have a very strong local public health system. So while we were doing all this, we have 53 community health boards and local public health departments that cover a population, and we have 11 tribal nations. We were working carefully behind the scenes with local public health to have them advocating for this also. And so we ended up, when we released the RFP, we ended up with 41 grants covering all 87 counties in Minnesota and 9 out of the 11 tribal governments that accept state monies. The other two do not accept state monies. And again, you heard that this is not about programs, even though it's called a statewide health improvement program. It's about policy systems and environmental changes. We talked a lot about, you know, in our state, there's a lot of emphasis on personal responsibility. Well, why don't you just give everybody a gym membership? They ought to be personally responsible. And so instead of fighting that, we just kind of said, Yep, there should be personal responsibility, but there's community responsibility. And so we paired those two. And then we said to people about the gym membership, we said, you know, the people who actually need some of this the most are not, don't have a gym close to them, that wouldn't work for them, that wouldn't, that's not part of their community and who they are. And so then people kind of resonated with that part. And we said, but if you make streets more bikeable and walkable, that can work for lots of people. So we just embraced that personal responsibility and community responsibility and tried to make that work in our state. So I told you about how it developed with Steps to a Healthier U.S. I think having stories to tell that are real for whatever prevention you're doing is so important. Now, with SHIP, with our statewide health improvement program, we developed a menu of evidence-based interventions. And we had multiple settings across the community as far as schools and work sites and communities and healthcare and working with it. And again, that gave reassurance to policymakers that we were doing things that would really make a difference. People got really nervous, and I think the energy and the optimism that's in this room, I'd say inhabit your future. Right in the middle of this, when we had been awarded the $47 million, but it hadn't gone out, we had another budget cycle come through with a huge budget deficit. And everyone started saying, oh, we're not going to get this money. Why should we plan? Why should we think about it? You know, so all the locals were starting to just get nervous and say, we can't, you know. And you had to say, if you start talking like that, that's going to be your destination. That's going to be your destiny. People are going to pick up on that. And I said, our best defense is a strong offense. So I said, because I needed those applications in, I said, I want every one of you, all 53 community health boards and all tribal, I want an application on my desk. I said, don't give me this, no, we can't do it, all of this stuff. And they did it. They did it, and so I was able to then write this fact sheet and go over to the legislature and say, overwhelming response. Everyone wants this. So I think you're so correct in saying we have to be optimistic about this. We have to be convincing. We have to be determined. Otherwise, if we become defeatist or become pessimistic, that will become our destiny. So again, here are just some examples of where we are. So we're, you know, a little bit over 1 year into the implementation of this of SHIP with the $47 million. So our fiscal year goes from July to July. We now have 28 post-secondary campuses working towards tobacco-free. You know, we have a statewide Freedom to Breathe Act for bars and restaurants and everything, but we have we're working now on campuses because if you know the tobacco industry, they can't overtly go after kids anymore, although they still covertly go after them, but they are overtly going after young adults. And so that we have some of the highest rates of tobacco use in our young adults. So one of the things I did, one of the fathers of SHIP, there was the Senate supporter, and then there was the House of Representatives supporter. The minute the campus in his city went smoke-free, we took a picture of it. We had the SHIP logo, you know, on the big plaque on the campus, and I wrote him a note. Aren't you proud of your, you know, institution in your county that's now gone smoke-free? Again, just tell those stories, show those pictures, help it make it real for people. We've got 181 schools working to create safe ways for students to walk to school. And there's just multiple examples, but I've been telling everyone on these leadership teams that have people from all these different walks of life in their communities, I said, find the way to get your stuff in the paper. Find the way, get the local representative. When you get a safe way for students to walk to school, ask your legislator to come and cut the ribbon, you know, for that pathway, that safe route to school. So we've been getting pictures in the paper. We've been getting articles written. Again, just making this very, very visible in our state. Now, so given that, we've been in a great place to think about how the federal funding can then complement SHIP. And so that's worked extremely well for us, and then being able to write grants, and we've gotten funding in all these areas to be able to complement what is going on with SHIP. So I think there's just a great need for us, no matter what is happening at the federal level. That is great news, and we're really encouraged by it, but we've got to be building this strong understanding at the state and local level of the importance of prevention and trying to continue to move that forward. So what are some lessons learned? I'd say bipartisan support and champions are essential, and just, you know, feed them, help them, continue to let those leadership teams at a local level, the more you can get those stories being told and those relationships being connected at a local level is just extremely important. I think having that where we had done pilots in communities beforehand, it gave concrete examples, you know, when you could say, oh, and here at the YMCA, they were doing taste testing of new fruits and vegetables with kids, and you could have a picture of kids having taste testing done, has just allowed us to be able to show to policymakers this is very real, and they get it. And when you say, oh, you know what, all our schools, most of the food comes in cans. We now have farmers who have relationships with the school, and they are bringing in fresh produce to the school. And you say to a policymaker, and you know what? We're giving little grants to school for great trays. You know, we gave it a name, great trays. And people go, well, yeah, we all know what a school lunch tray is. We want great trays for our kids. We're giving little grants so people can get the equipment, not just to open a can, but to cut and chop and peel this produce that's coming in from farmer. And here's Farmer Joe, you know, who's at the school and talking to the kids about where the food is coming from. So again, making it very concrete for policymakers that they can relate to. I think the public-private partnerships, we've had our nonprofit health plans have been just so supportive of this. You know, the American Lung Association, American Cancer, American Heart, just lots of public-private partnerships are critical to making this happening. And then having, you know, the people who purchase the food for the schools, you know, getting involved. I mean, just different partnerships that we've had. And then I think having the data, one of the things that we've used over and over is about how prevention long-term can help us with rising healthcare costs. I mean, we've got to show that we are part of the solution for the problem of rising healthcare costs. Rising healthcare costs are eating our lunch. You know, no pun intended there, but they are eating our lunch in Minnesota, and they are robbing everything else. They're, you know, it's the population health, only 20% is determined by healthcare. The rest is healthy behaviors and all the social determinants of health. We've made it very, very clear that we, by getting more upstream, can help with this rising healthcare cost issue. So what's next for us? It was interesting. My staff had put on here, instead of the first bullet, they said, look for a sustainable funding source. And I said, no, no, we're not looking for it. We're creating a sustainable funding source. I mean, we've just got to be very focused. We need to create a sustainable funding source. We put into a SHIP report that went to the legislature last January, the legislature, and this is where smart legislators can be on your side. The senator who gave us the $47 million out of her budget also put in there that the Commissioner of Health had to had to come back with recommendations for funding sources. So I came back with recommendations for funding sources that said health impact fee on tobacco, health impact fee on sugar-sweetened beverages, and work with hospitals around their community benefit. That those were three options for recommendations. Now, what I had to say was also that my governor did not support any of those recommendations, but they are in the report for SHIP, and we will have a new governor this next legislative term. And so my governor was very, we worked it out. We worked it out. But again, you just have to, Think creatively about how you can do this. And then I think we, for us to explore infrastructure to address other issues. What we have with SHIP now, with all these community health boards, all these leadership teams that are brought together, stakeholders, the energy we have going around it, we can take on other things that need policy systems and environmental changes. So I think we need to not just think about a program here and a program here with this funding. We've got to create an infrastructure that we can be flexible with, because we could use what we're doing with SHIP on tobacco and obesity. We could go after alcohol. You know, we could go after other things that need system and environmental changes. So that's my part. I'll let others talk about the things that they're doing and look forward to the discussion.
Organizing image, please wait. Ah. Oh, while we're waiting. So from you may have seen Sandy's description of the there's nothing here. Sure, throw out a question while we're waiting.
You're always trading off stuff. I would love to have taken on alcohol. Initially, it was we were going to go after the CDC, not the minimum amount per capita. I think our 47 million is the minimum amount per capita that CDC says you need for a statewide program. I would love to have gone more, because then we could be addressing alcohol and we wouldn't have to like subsequently try to go back and do it. But again, you go for what you can get, and this seemed like we were doing great to be able to get this in a state that had lost all of its tobacco endowment, you know, years ago for budget issues. So I felt like, you know, don't look a gift horse too much in the mouth and with that. But otherwise, I think, you know, building this at the local level. In Minnesota, that's how you get policy, system, and environmental changes done, is you do it at a grass level, and that's how we got Freedom to Breathe done. You know, we did ordinances at a grass level, and then that built up to where we had a statewide piece. So that's just how it works best in Minnesota.
Okay. Well, while we're waiting for the technical help, keep going with the questions. Yeah. Fees.
Oh, health impact. Oh, yeah, okay. So she asked what were the three fees, or what were the things in the recommendations. Health. Now, in Minnesota, my governor was willing to raise a health impact fee, but was not willing to have a classic tax. So it was a health impact fee on tobacco and a health impact fee on sugar-sweetened beverages. Again, I think we have to be wise about that, because the lady who was talking about the ads that are now in her state about the woman in the grocery store, how many of you have those woman in the grocery store who's saying, don't interfere with what kind of food I buy? Those are now in Minnesota. And I, you know, I think there might be a connection between those. So, and I know two states that passed, you know, fees or taxes on sugar-sweetened beverages now have huge ad campaigns to try to undo that legislation. We got to be really smart about that. So, yes.
Well, I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about what the policy for community response to the sugar-sweetened.
Well, I think the evidence for that is, I haven't reviewed it real recently, but the evidence for that is not as strong as the evidence for tobacco. There's just a lot more data about tobacco than sugar sweetened beverages. So I think that one's a harder one for people to deal with, you know, fees on food. I think that's just, it's a harder one to sell, at least in Minnesota, than other places. There's certainly evidence around it, but I think that's just a harder one. I think you should talk to Maine and who was it on the West Coast that passed? What was it, Washington? There are two states who have passed it, and you should talk to them about their experience with it. So,